Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome back to everybody's favorite, slightly full recycling bin of podcasts, the Geek Cave Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm comics.
And I'm movies. I'm Chad. All right.
Go listen to the gaming one, you'll get it.
Don't forget to listen to our previous 2 days' worth of episodes, comics from Tuesday and games from Wednesday. Today, Thursday, is movies. We're brought to you by Shirt of Source, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today with free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old-school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or something in between, find something for you at shirtosaurus.com. And Gamefly, with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages, Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back with the postage-paid envelope for a new one. Or keep it forever, pay a lot less than in-store prices, and they just updated their rewards program, where you can stack up to $20 in coupons toward any purchase.
Ooh.
Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Hey, that sounds like a familiar address. Is that ours?
Huh. Yeah, I think so.
Crazy. Huh. Kooky. Wild. Amazing. I've been busy. Justin, have you gone to a party?
And a one, and a two, and a one, two, three, four.
I'm a party!
Pilot party!
I like the new intro.
Oh, thank you. I have a kid who's sleeping directly above me, so I thought, you know what? I'm going to keep it mellow this time. More wise. Acoustic.
Wise choice.
It's Pilot Party Unplugged.
Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. Why only the first episode? Because April showers bring May flowers, but that's not all they bring. Lightning strikes to Transformers, knocking out my electricity. And now that the lights are out, I want to tell you a ghost story.
Ooh. I scared.
In the Kamome Academy, there are seven mysteries. The seventh and most famous of all is Hanukara, the ghost girl, said to reside in the third stall of the girls' bathroom on the third floor, with the ability to grant a single wish for the appropriate price. Yashiro, a first-year high school student, approaches the cubicle intending to wish for a happy romance with her crush and popular senior student, Minamoto. When Hanukara appears, Yashiro is shocked to discover he is not a girl. Undaunted, she makes her wish, and Hanukara produces a self-help book. This is because making a human heart do something it doesn't want to do would cost something even more drastic. So the lessons in love begin, and fail miserably. Everything she does, from leaving vegetables on his desk with an anonymous thank you card, to trying to run into him in the hall, missing, hitting someone else, and falling down a flight of stairs, they just don't work. What we discover is that Hanukara isn't that skilled of a ghost because not many people know how to summon him. During the ensuing argument with Yashiro, she finds a pouch containing a pair of mermaid scales. As Hanukara tries to get them back, Yashiro puts one of them in her mouth and threatens to swallow it if he doesn't explain what they are. Yeah, it's that kind of story. Hanukara says they are used in matchmaking. People who swallow them are tied together with an unbreakable bond. But before he can mention the curse, she swallows it and runs off to give the other one to her crush. She finds Minamoto and overhears him talking about the girl that he likes. She decides not to feed him the scale and turns into a fish. She's rescued by Hanakuro, who puts her in a little fish tank. He then tells her about the curse, which is that she must now serve the mermaid. And on cue, a giant spectral mermaid crashes through the floor to collect her new servant. Hanakuro tries to reason with the mermaid and then pulls a knife. Temporarily defeating the mermaid, he tells Yashiro she can still wish for herself to become a human again, and promises to keep her life as normal as possible. She does, but before he grants it, Hanakuro swallows the other scale. Yashiro is human, and now is linked to Hanakuro. He wanted a human assistant, and now he has one. Also, she has scales that will flare up when she gets wet. Oh, and the name of the show? Toilet Bound Hanakuro-kun.
Okay, that's that. All right, that's where it is. That's where the title is. Okay.
I don't know what else to say. It's an anime about a wish-granting ghost who lives in a girl's bathroom. What more do you want?
I want to know what's going to happen.
Well, now for my prediction. Yashiro spends the rest of her time at the school doing Hanakuro's bidding and also trying to get rid of her scales. By the time she graduates, she and Hanakuro have fallen in love. She takes a job at the school so she can be with him forever. They eventually have a child who gets sent to a very prestigious and elite school of magic in the UK on a scholarship. There she dies and carries on the family tradition of haunting girls' restrooms. I give it 3 poltergeist-possessed powder rooms out of 5.
I don't know what I was expecting.
Yeah.
I mean, this wasn't it.
No.
But at the same time, now I just have this desire for fish and chips.
I do like fish and chips, yes.
I do. I know this place in town where the fish and chips are so good, it's downright haunting.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. I had to work for that one.
It's all right.
Making up for the intro joke from last segment.
It paid off.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
Okay.
I'm on board.
I do like a good fishy pun.
All right. Mm-hmm. I love how supportive you two are.
Yeah.
You really tipped the scales on that one.
Hey.
They all have their place.
Yes. I like a good pun just for the halibut.
All right.
Too far.
Let's move along, shall we? So, gentlemen, yes, I'm talking to you too. There are a lot of shows out there that live in the memories of TV land. Some of them are given new life, and some are sent to the same island that Amelia Earhart ended up on.
Themyscira?
This segment of the show asked you about one such forgotten piece of television history and asks, should we review it? It was good then, the original's just as good now. Reboot, the idea is sound, but we can modernize it, capture some magic. Revive it, what are these characters doing after a couple decades of growth and development? Or refuse it, Chad, no, just... No. Heck no, man. Yeah, I do believe you get your butt kicked with that kind of talk. This is an interesting one. This is a show that lasted for 2.5 seasons. Each season, effectively, was a different show. Third season was militaristic and political. The second season, pure science fantasy. Season 1 was Star Trek Underwater. The 21st century, mankind has colonized the last unexplored region on Earth, the ocean. As captain of the SeaQuest and its crew, we are its guardians, for beneath the surface lies the future. It was originally set in 2018, except its third season, which was set in 2032. Season 1 was a space opera underwater, following the adventures of the SeaQuest on its quest to... Sorry. About doing research and dealing with environmental issues and playing around with political mumbo jumbo and the relationships with the crew.
When they don't get to Boldly Go.
Yeah. Season 2 changed a bunch of its crew and characters, and it leaned into that crazy and kooky world of fantasy with such things as finding killer plants, fire-breathing worms, dealing with time travel, finding an ancient demon, you know, and causing its, you know, lead actor Roy Schneider to leave the show. Season 3 changed crews again, set itself 10 years later with Michael Ironside as the captain, and the tone of the show shifting from science or science fantasy to international politics. It was the darkest season, lasted a grand total of 13 episodes before being canceled midway. So as we consider the three shows in one of Sequest DSV, what say you? Shall we review, reboot, revive, or refuse?
I gotta give this one a refuse. I remember watching the pilot and I'm just like, what the is this?
Is
and
this
later as I grew up and, you know, I broadened my horizons and I'm watching Jaws for the first time going, is that the dude from Sequest? Because I saw that one first.
Is this the show where the dog from Frasier ended up riding like the dolphin from this particular show?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah, the dolphin had telepathic Darwin. Abilities. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Darwin could talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Jonathan Brandis as Lucas.
Yeah, no. Refuse this one.
Wow, we finally got a refuse, huh?
Yeah. No.
When Roy Schneider is introduced to his pet dolphin, who's now been given talking capabilities, he asks him, what swimsuit color do I normally wear? And the dolphin replies, well, you don't wear a swimsuit. That is the level the first season was hitting.
This is one of those shows where if it were just on, I would probably go, huh. Yeah, I'll watch this for a trip down memory lane. But I'm not buying this series.
No.
I'm not watching these. I own some truly terrible shows.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a good underwater adventure, watch the Adult Swim original SeaLab 2021.
See, that's where I thought we were going at first. And I was super excited. And then
and then you weren't.
Then he said the word Sequest, and I'm like, oh no.
Oh no.
And he's not talking about the cruises.
No, I wasn't. No, I wasn't. Don't worry. I've got even greater, you know, even greater shows yet to come.
Okay.
So, wow, we got to refuse. It's taken a bit, but we've got to refuse.
There's a first time for everything.
So they tell me. Now.
No, wait. Wasn't Major Dad a refuse?
I don't remember.
No, not entirely.
Okay. All right. Not a straight refuse.
Not
okay.
A straight refuse.
I think that one ended up being a revive. The idea, like, if you had just a single show, you know, like they have the reunion thing where it's like the 1-hour-long special.
I don't know. They all bleed together after a while. If you know the answer, get on Discord and tell us.
Yeah. So, as we continue on. Darren, you told me that you got to see a movie this month. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, I got to go to the local theater for some fine cinema alongside one of my friends who was wearing a headpiece that made it look like he had Sonic the Hedgehog's head.
Mm-mm.
And completely unapologetic about it. Hi, John. We went to see Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Did you got to go fast?
In fact, we did go fast because we got there just a few minutes before the movie began.
He said the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, we ended up we were running a bit late, so we did have to go fast to get there. Did you see the first one?
No.
Yes.
Okay, Justin, it's the first one, but slightly better.
Okay.
So, yeah.
My son will look forward to it.
Yeah, I liked it. You know, it set a decent bar for video game movies, but it's not like that was a huge bar in the first place. Let's be honest. They can't all be Super Mario Brothers the movie. or Mortal Kombat or any of the Tomb Raiders. But for what it is, yeah.
Or Double Dragon or Street Fighter.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I like Double Dragon. Like, not as an objectively good movie, but like, I watched it at the right time with the right attitude the first time, and it's just like, oh yeah,
I got
this is the right kind of schlock.
I got the off-brand from Dollar Tree, Double Dragon. That wasn't as good. No, it's fine. Sonic is... All right, spoilers. The first movie ends with Dr. Robotnik stranded on a planet that's just nothing but giant mushrooms. And he ends up figuring out a way to get off that planet. He comes back and goes after Sonic, who is on Earth. And Robotnik brings Knuckles with him, voiced by Idris Elba.
Okay.
And it's, you know, pretty dope. There's a good fight scene here and there. Tails shows up and saves Sonic. There's a helicopter butt joke because...
There better be.
It's Tails. There's one point where they even have the biplane, you know, that you see from Sonic 2 and 3. And yeah, it's great.
As is right and proper.
Halfway through the movie, Knuckles realizes that maybe there's more to life than just being the strongest warrior. And maybe Robotnik, this clearly evil man, is lying to me.
Probably.
Although
also
there's a couple of great little cutaway gags here and there. At one point when Robotnik betrays him, he's got all of these little... robots hovering around him, and Knuckles is like, I will destroy your robots as easily as... Oh, wait. They're stairs, because he's hanging off of the edge of a cliff, and the robots actually just set up so he can climb up. It's just one of those little, kind of things. There's a weird aside halfway... No, about a quarter into the movie, where this antagonist female character from the first movie is getting married... And for some reason, Sonic's friends are at the wedding, and somehow this ring that opens a teleportation gate got mixed up with the wedding bands, because of course it did. And instead of explaining this situation like a reasonable, rational, freaking human being, Cyclops... I know the actor's name, I'm just not going to call him by his name. Cyclops just... And I'll get into that theory in a second. Cyclops punches the groom.
I'm sorry.
I'll let him have it. Are you all right?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm good now. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry.
It's a joke that's going to be revisited during my random movie review.
Okay.
Enough.
Oh no.
He punches the groom in the face so he can get the ring while they're in the middle of the ceremony, because movie. It turns out that the wedding was an elaborate sting by this government organization, so they could capture Sonic if he showed up at the wedding for the person that hates him. Yeah, but that leads to a kind of a fun Bridezilla montage where the woman is just like wrecking everything as she's trying to get her hands on this agent. And it's a fun sequence of events. I did laugh, but I also found myself, hey, isn't this movie about a small blue hedgehog and not a large angry woman? I mean, if that's what it is now, then fine. But I feel like I've been sold a bill of goods. But luckily, you know, things get back onto track. Long story short, Robotnik manages to get a hold of the Chaos Emeralds and manages to turn himself into... Well, not turn himself into, but he builds... So this Master Emerald gives you the ability to conjure up anything you want. Think a Green Lantern ring, but even more unlimited power. What does he do? Giant robot. Why not? Has one of the funniest sight gags in the movie, though, because his underling can't figure out how to do anything inside the robot until he finds the manual, which looks exactly like an old Sega Genesis user's guide.
Nice.
It was a great sight gag.
Yes.
Sonic manages to get a hold of the emeralds, becomes Super Saiyan, Super Sonic for a while. He's obsessed with chili dogs. Knuckles learns about the power of friendship. They all play baseball at the end, and that's it. Oh, and there's a Stainer post-credit scene. Again, I said spoilers at the beginning of this. Shadow's going to show up in Sonic 3. Shadow, you know, the hedgehog that they gave guns to because he was black. That one.
Huh.
Yeah. But back to the Cyclops thing. James Marsden is I'm sure he's a fine person.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good actor. My headcanon is that he didn't die in X3. Cyclops was instead teleported by the Phoenix to another Earth, so he couldn't stop her from doing what she did in X3. That's why there's no body. And after that, finding himself on a planet where the rules are different, he doesn't have mutant powers anymore, he ends up just trying to start a new identity in Washington State, where he joins a small police force, quickly rising through the ranks to become sheriff due to his paramilitary training with Charles Xavier, and tries to live a quiet life when all of a sudden this alien hedgehog shows up, and that explains why he was only freaked out by him for like a second before he was on board with everything in the first movie. The character's name in the movies, I honestly can't remember other than that Sonic calls him Donut Lord for some reason due to a running joke. But I posit to you that the Sonic the Hedgehog movies are a spinoff of the original X-Men trilogy.
Could only be made better by that.
Yeah. So there we go. That's Sonic 2. It's good. Cyclops is in it. And so is a Bridezilla. And Jim Carrey was great. Jim Carrey says this might be his last role. Now, he announced his retirement on April 1st. Take that what you will. But if it is, I mean, he had the biggest opening of his career with this movie. And if that's his last role, honestly, he nailed it. I loved it.
Good way of going out.
Yeah, I liked it.
I have a slight tweak to your fan theory.
Okay.
What you said stands. Jean teleported Cyclops to another dimension where he couldn't stop her. Because after X3, he starred in Enchanted and Hop and, you know, Sonic and, oh, Anchorman 2.
Yep.
And so what I posit is every time Scott, quote, passes away in this new reality, he Scott Bakula's himself into another reality.
Did we just quantum leap fix X3?
Yes, we did.
Well, yes! That part of X3.
That part of X3.
That part, you know, of X3, yeah.
Baby steps. Baby steps. Fix, I mean, it. If you're going to do a big
project.
There's already
precedent for it, because that's exactly what Charles Xavier did in X3, was when he was dusted, he ended up in the body of the...
Yeah.
So, but like, he stayed in the same universe.
So, like, yeah, if we're going to fix something like that, we got to start small. Baby steps. You tackle a huge project by doing a little bit at a time. Next, I'll tell you how somehow Storm is not... Okay, I can't go that far. Storm is terrible in that movie. But I'll try.
All right.
Storm is actually Catwoman. No, carry on.
So, I watched a few trailers because I like watching trailers. I like knowing what's coming. There's some weird stuff coming. So, we're starting with Last Seen Alive, a thriller action movie with Gerard Butler, and it looks intense. Dude's having an argument with his spouse, and they stop at a gas station, and she disappears. There were some marriage problems in there.
Oh,
so
that's not good.
There are some things. Mm. It looks like one of those movies where they're going to put a weird twist at the end. So I'm not sure yet. Thor, Love and Thunder. Yes, of course Thor is about to go on a journey of self-discovery, because he's quite clearly not the only one worthy to wield Mjolnir. And so he has to figure out what makes him a super special snowflake now.
I will admit I like the trailer for that.
The trailer is amazing for it.
Same.
I have to make fun of it. It's in my contract.
Hmm?
Hatching. You know, a Finnish horror film about a terrifying giant bird and a deceptively perfect family might have intrigued me enough to watch it once. Now it just looks scary and I don't wanna. You know, Rare Exports was good. Hatching looks terrifying. Lightyear, they gave away a twist they shouldn't have, but otherwise it looks like it'll be a fun action-y movie out of Pixar doing the Buzz Lightyear origin story. Monstrous, from the studio is called a chicken soup for the soul, you know, thing. It's a scary movie that starts out very saccharine sweet, like 50s, you know, Sandman kind of stuff, before becoming a monster movie involving a lake monster. Not on board. Not on board. And then, finally, I watched the trailer for Paws of Fury.
Oh.
What a cast. Hmm. What an idea. I've never seen its like before. So original. An incompetent dog wants to be a mighty samurai. I mean, wow. Just, wow. Bravo.
He's a, yeah, he might end up being a number one super guy.
He might mm-hmm. be. Mm-hmm.
I hope he does.
Justin, do you have anything else for us today?
I do not.
All right. Then I think it's time for the...
Oh, yeah. One more thing.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
Okay, you remember that charcoal drawing in Titanic of naked Kate Winslet?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure that most...
It was 1997. Of course I remember.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was a Tuesday. Yeah, James Cameron drew that. See, because I guess if you want something done right, like the picture of a hot naked woman, might as well do it yourself.
I just use a camera.
I just use the hole in the wall, but that's just me.
Or the internet. Well then, Kent?
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
By the roll of the dice, I will apparently be watching the 2012 Tim Burton film Dark Shadows next month.
Ooh.
Oh.
So we'll see how that goes.
Okay.
This month, I watched the Chris Hemsworth film Black Hat. That's Black Hat.
Yeah.
Not Black Cat.
Yeah.
Black Hat.
Mm-hmm.
Black Hat is a movie that can't quite decide if it's going to be a cyber thriller, a mystery, an action movie, or a romance. So it makes the daring decision to do all of those things poorly. Okay, that's being a little harsh. The movie's not bad. In fact, I was quite entertained throughout it.
Oh, okay.
As I watched a depowered Thor seemingly know everything about everything and say almost nothing until it was obvious that he's the smartest person in the room.
Ah.
I'm getting ahead of myself. The movie opens with a CGI-tastic silent metaphor for how some computers are being hacked. The goal, it seems, is to sabotage a nuclear power plant in China and cause a meltdown. Shortly thereafter that scene, a stock exchange is hacked, which causes soy futures to rise in Chicago. Well, you done messed up now, A.A. Ron, because now both the Chinese government and the FBI want to track you down. So the Chinese government sends Chen to the U.S. to work with the FBI and find the hacker. He brings his sister, Lien, because he needs someone he can trust. I need someone I can trust completely, he says. And the movie's going to need a romantic partner for later.
Sure.
In meeting with the FBI, Chen reveals that the code that was used on the stock exchange is based on his work when he was at MIT and is actually the work of his college roommate, who is now in prison. And if they want to catch the crook, they need to spring Thor out of jail. There are two leads that they can follow. One follows the money, which Chen's going to do. The other is to arrange a meeting with the bad guy through chat messaging, because that's still a thing in hacker world. So that's what Thor does. Okay, his name in the movie is Hathaway, but he's an unreasonably jacked computer hacker. We're going to stick with Thor.
It's the Cyclops problem.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. At the meetup, no one shows, and Thor realizes that they've been watched by security cameras. So he discovers things, he gets into a fight, he writes the bad guy a little letter on the computer to say that I, Thor, am now on the trail.
I hope that
He chooses Ghost Man as his name. Boo. He should have went with Thor.
Boo. Yeah, he should have went with
Thor. Following the money.
At least Odin's son. Come on.
Yeah. In Following the Money, Chen and one of the FBI handlers tracks it to a dude operating out of Hong Kong. So they're going to take the dude who's furloughed out of prison across international lines somehow. And so they all go to China. They meet with a police inspector. They raid a hideout. A whole bunch of people get killed by explosives and gunfire, which, as best as I can tell, exists only to show how dangerous the bad guys are. Despite having, at the beginning of the movie, caused a meltdown of a nuclear reactor. We need to kill cops to show that this is a bad dude.
Okay.
Anyway, Team Thor realizes that the code for the reactor job can probably be found on the drives in the plant. So they suit up and they recover the correct drive out of God knows how many of them that are there. They get it on the first try, only to find out that the radiation has corrupted the data. Oh no! What are they going to do with a bunch of computer hackers literally in charge of the investigation? Huh. Hmm. Clearly, they're going to hack into the NSA and use some of their tools to get the clues they need. Actually, in the movie, they make this make sense, but it's not nearly so funny that way. In continuing our chase, the team's led then to Malaysia because we don't have enough hopping. And I'm pretty sure at this point, the director is actually on vacation and he's just got to find an excuse to bring all these other people along. Everyone then on the team is killed. Chen's killed. The FBI handler's killed. The U.S. Marshal that's supposed to be following Thor's killed. Only Thor and his new girlfriend, Chen's sister, are left alive.
Wow, that's convenient.
Lien. Her name's Lien. I'm not going to do that Lien. Thing.
Yeah.
Seriously, the whole thing's really obvious. Because it's like all three of our primary characters are in the car at the same time, and then two of them get out. And as they get closer to the camera, like the car behind them obviously changes over. Like it's one of those things where it's like, that car's not actually there now. Huh. I bet something's going to happen to it. Maybe they should have put some of those computer hackers in charge of animation. Let's skip ahead to the ending. The bad guy's plan, he wants to sabotage a dam and flood a bunch of tin mines so he can make shattering sums of money on tin futures in the stock market. I guess.
Tin.
Who's buying loads of tin?
No one that I know of.
But if you suddenly don't have a supply of it.
I suppose.
I mean, the whole thing kind of lost me for a bit. Before this can happen, you know, the whole tin dam thing. Thor steals the guy's money so he can't buy things. The bad guy proposes a partnership, then tries to double-cross our hero. Thor stabs one guy once with a screwdriver, shoots a different guy with the bad guy's gun, and then stabs the main guy a bunch of times with a different screwdriver. Because we got to keep with the tool theme if we're going to keep calling him Thor. Thor gets away with all the bad guy's money and a new girlfriend. Happy endings all around. Like I said, it's entertaining, but it's not great. It's the kind of movie I might watch one more time to pick up on some things I missed, but I'm not going out of my way to do so. This is I'm at the in-laws and it's on HBO. Yeah, all right, fine. The actors buy into their roles well enough to sell them. Viola Davis is probably the standout of the secondary characters as Jessup, the FBI agent. Action scenes are fanciful, but also brutal, not good for kids. A few things are just too convenient to suspend our disbelief around, but for a 2-hour runtime, what do we really expect? Grudgingly, this one's a B like me.
Okay.
It is entertaining, and it's well-constructed, paced, and acted, not without its problems, but the problems honestly can be forgiven. With no other business. Thanks to our sponsors, Shorter Source and Gamefly. Find geeky news, etc. at geekcavepodcast.com. Join the Discord for fun conversation and tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, Good Pod, and so forth. Don't forget to check out our other offerings, including You Want Me to Watch What? And Week 3, then head over to twitch.tv/geekcavepodcast to see Darren play some video games. Or find our YouTube channel and see Geek Cave Plays and Retromantics. So for Kent, our Sony Walkman, dependable and rugged. Darren Wright, our Discman, now with ESP. Justin White, our iPod, hip and with it. I'm Chad Savage, your Zune, and some people like me. Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.